From Interfaith Alliance, this is State of Belief Radio. I'm your host, Reverend Welton Gaddy. This week we're broadcasting from the Center for American Progress Studios in Washington, D.C. I'm glad to be back in Washington, D.C. We've been on the road for a while.
Show us anew that happiness is found only in respecting the laws of nature and of nature's God. Empower us with your grace so that we might resist the temptation to replace the moral law with idols of our own making, or to remake those institutions you've given us for the nurturing of life and community.
That, by the way, is Catholic Archbishop Timothy Dolan, head of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, during his closing benediction or lecture, I'm not sure which, at the Democratic National Convention. It was listed as a benediction. The prayer was chock full of veiled condemnation for central social justice tenets of today's Democratic Party and natural law, which is often used as a code for heterosexuality. In the long run, the historic endorsement of marriage equality in the party's platform will far outlive any opportunistic digs from any late-night remarks from a religious leader. And on this week's show, we'll look at the next steps in our nation's inexorable march toward fairness for all families with Marriage Equality USA's Kathy Marino Thomas.
A deeply divided Democratic convention has just passed a stunning reversal, rewriting hotly disputed platform language that omitted references to God.
Whether it was the prevalence of God talk at the Republican convention or the strange and sudden insertion of the word itself in the platform at the Democratic gathering, you couldn't go very far at either convention without bumping into faith. What about potential voters who don't profess a religious orientation? Who's speaking to them? Well, speaking for them is the growing Secular Coalition for America, and you'll hear from Executive Director Edwina Rogers when she joins us in the studio later on this week's show. But first,
I care far less as to where Mitt Romney takes his family to church than I do about where he takes this country.
This week, over two dozen prominent conservative Christian leaders signed a letter to Mitt Romney affirming that their support for his candidacy may have been tempered by theological disagreements with his faith, but no more. Tony Perkins, Franklin Graham, and 26 other notables pledged to rise above faith issues and support the candidate on policy. It's a desperately needed step in the right direction for our politics and our nation when leaders who have specialized in injecting religious rhetoric into every policy debate decide, however self-serving the decision may be, to focus not on faith but on issues. But this show is called State of Belief, and so while we applaud this proposed disentanglement of religion and politics, we must always look at the broader role religion plays in our public life. And the nomination of Mitt Romney is historic in terms of his religious background. Joining me right now is Joanna Brooks, who writes frequently for Religion Dispatches, where she is a senior correspondent. Her new book is called Book of Mormon Girl, Stories from an American Faith. Joanna, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Reverend Gaddy, thank you for having me.
You've laid out a number of compelling ideas on the pages of Religion Dispatches magazine, and there was one recent piece headlined, "Where Are the Mormon Nuns on the Bus?" Would you talk about that one?
Well, we've had the bold example this summer and fall of Catholic nuns who oppose the Ryan Romney budget for its deep cuts to programs like food stamps that are vital to the protection of the nation's most vulnerable, while giving tax relief to the wealthy. And a friend of mine who is a progressive Mormon person asked, where are the voices of conscience from Mormonism? Do we have anyone that's raised such an example, made such a bold example? Instead, we seem to be represented in the public sphere by Mitt Romney, and he's going unchallenged.
Mm-hmm. I hear you saying that progressive Mormons are feeling left out with the ultra-conservative platform of the Republican Party being conflated in the public eye with Mormonism. Is that right?
That's right. You know, the most striking image that Mormonism has given the world lately is, you know, the guy in a suit. You know, it starts with our sweet young missionaries who, to keep the rules, wear white shirts and ties. But that's what our church leaders wear too. Mm-hmm. We don't wear vestments in our tradition. We dress in business attire. Basically, the men do who are church leaders. And so there is this conflation with our church leaders, institutional leaders, and corporate figures like Romney, like Bill Marriott, like David Neeleman, head of JetBlue, the sense that Mormon leadership is bureaucratic leadership. We do have a prophetic faith tradition. Mm-hmm. There are elements of our history that have been about economic communitarianism. Mm-hmm. Care for the poor is one of our highest values. And so right now, Mormon progressives are organizing to get our witness out there.
Tell us what you think the moral issues are that are being raised in this campaign, and then talk a little about what moral issues should be raised during this campaign from a Mormon perspective.
Well, you know, we are still in the hangover of decades when religion has been weaponized around certain subjects, whether gay people enjoy the right under civil law to marry whom they choose. We hear religion mobilized a great deal around issues of access to contraception and, of course, always access to abortion. The deeper moral issue is a more subtle one. It's the question of whether or not government has a role in our society.
Yeah.
You know, is government, and you know, I think one of the things I'm interested in, Reverend Getty, is how people of faith have been taught to fear and oppose government, that government is inimically opposed to the interests of people of faith, and that has been for decades. I mean, I see government as being actually open to lobbying from organized people of faith, including progressive people of faith. You know, we see the great civil rights reforms were enacted by people of faith lobbying government. Is government something to be abandoned, or is government something we can think of as a trans-faith space for collaboration to address pressing moral questions like poverty, like the fact that, you know, a quarter of the children in this country are growing up under the poverty line without decent access to health care, to, you know, quality education. That's a moral issue. It needs to be remembered that what animates, at times, Governor Romney's platform is the sensibility inherited from Grover Norquist, the conservative strategist who is famous for saying he wants to shrink government to the size where it can be frazzled and shoved down a drain in the bathtub. I mean, people of goodwill recognize that there are things we do together to guarantee an infrastructure for our society, and we have faith-based reasons for doing those. Are we preparing as a nation for our children's future in a responsible way by taking care of our debt, working together, caring for our elderly at the same time? Yeah. Or are we being taken advantage of by a drive to end government as we know it?
You wrote about how you didn't see the Mormon story connected to the American story at the Republican National Convention. Would you expand on that just a little?
I was really excited and moved as a Mormon person by the idea that Mitt Romney would, after being so reticent to discuss his faith, bring everyday Mormons on to speak at the RNC, at the convention. We've been caricatured, you know, we've been made fun of, and to see real, genuine Mormon people talking about and talking from the core compassionate spirit of our tradition was very moving to me. Mm-hmm. But then I sat and reflected on it, and I realized that nowhere in his telling of his own personal story did Mitt bring in the story of us as a Mormon people, the larger story. I was hoping at some point to see a candidate biopic, you know, with a pioneer wagon rolling across the plains. That story of us is so important, and it has such political value to us. It's an American story of shared dreams and shared sacrifices to build something new. Yeah. And that was left out. And so I came, as I reflected on it, I realized that Romney had marshaled speakers from the Mormon faith who could attest to his character.
Right.
But his candidacy was not a moment in which our story could be seen as part of the American story. So it was a missed opportunity.
Okay, let's go to your new book, Book of Mormon Girl. It's a memoir. Tell me about it.
Well, you know, there are so few books on the shelf if you go to your bookstore where Mormon people are writing about everyday Mormon experience. There are some good histories about the early founding of our faith. There are some crazy sensational books written by either escaped polygamous child brides who are members of an ultra-Orthodox splinter group or by, you know, people like John Krakauer who try to sensationalize the history of our faith, but a story about what it feels like to be Mormon, to be an all-American girl growing up in this all-American religion, and to really wrestle with the faith as you come of age. Now, that's an experience many people of faith understand. You grow up, you have questions, and you try to make a home to carry out the best of your faith, you know, in and through your questions and struggles and doubts. So that's the story I tell in the Book of Mormon Girl. It's funny, it's real, it's all true, and it just tries to humanize the Mormon experience a bit. I grew up soaking in the best of my faith tradition and feeling very at home in it. I grew up with this ideal of Zion, this story that the pioneers, the Mormon pioneers, had gathered to build a new home for themselves where people would be taken care of. That value I embedded deeply, and it's always guided my thinking on things from the time I was a small child, that and the Christian testimony, basic love one another, care for the poor. And it wasn't until I went to college at Brigham Young University that I realized I was actually a liberal. And I arrived just at a time when the institutional church was cracking down on feminist intellectuals. So as a 21-year-old, seeing folks I cared about excommunicated, I had to ask myself, is there a place for me here in this faith I love so much?
Someone reads your book. What do you want them to say? Well, here's what that meant to me.
I wrote this book to give anyone who is on a faith journey courage and companionship. If you're Mormon, it can be really difficult in some of our conservative congregations to say, I have questions, or I lean a little liberal. Anyone who knows what it's like to be, you know, walking through this life with a big spiritual question in your heart and needs a little shelter and encouragement, I hope this book will help you laugh and feel a little bit less alone.
Joanna Brooks is the Mormon Girl. She is a senior correspondent for Religion Dispatches magazine. And she has just published this book, Book of Mormon Girls, Stories from an American Faith. Joanna, thanks for being with us again on State of Belief Radio.
Well, and thank you for your work, Reverend Caddy. Appreciate it.
We've got to take a short break, but coming right up, Edwina Rogers, Executive Director of the Secular Coalition for America. And then later in the show, Marriage Equality USA Board Co-President Kathy Marino Thomas. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio, brought to you by Interfaith Alliance. Welcome back to State of Belief Radio, everyone. I'm Welton Gaddy. So much of the rhetoric at the recent national political conventions was steeped in the language of faith. What about the large number of Americans for whom religious faith is not a factor, and the much larger number of Americans who do hold religious convictions but are sick and tired of substantive issues being hijacked by religious rhetoric? Who's speaking to them? Well, glad you ask. Speaking for them is the Secular Coalition for America. I'm very pleased to have its new executive director, Edwina Rogers, join us here in studio. Welcome, Edwina.
Thank you very much for having me.
What are the goals of the Secular Coalition for America?
To promote separation of religion and government, of course, church and state. And we think that's the best guarantee for freedom for all, for religious freedom for all. And then we have another goal where we promote and look after the non-theistic community and working hard to get them at the decision-making table with everybody else included in the political process.
Well, talk a little bit about the aggressive expansion plans that you have at the coalition. I know that they're underway.
Yes, they are, and they are very aggressive. We are representing somewhere between 20% and 30% of the U.S. population now. The Pew polls are right at 19-20%. where people say they're non-religious. And Gallup Win poll just came out at 30%. So what we're doing, we're setting up shop in all 50 states, coalitions like the Secular Coalition for Virginia, Secular Coalition for Maryland. In May, we had two states organized. And as of last week, we had 29 states organized. And by the end of the year, we'll have 50 states, plus the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico.
My goodness, that's very impressive. You must be a busy person.
We're very busy. Yeah.
Are you finding in communities a welcome for the organization?
As a matter of fact, we have been surprised at how welcomed we have been, even by religious groups. I mean, there's been a one-off situation, you know, something in Kentucky with a minister in the press saying he was going to disrupt all of our phone calls and meetings, and then he took it back. And there was an elected official in Virginia who said he's going to bring us to our knees in prayer. But other than that, it's been very receptive. The calls have been organizing calls have been flooded with affiliates of member organizations in the state, but then also individuals that haven't been involved politically or involved in the secular movement or the non-theistic movement. Mm-hmm. Just calling in, they feel like it's gone too far, some of the actions by the religious right and others.
How will you tell, what kind of benchmarks are there for you to tell whether or not this is working? For example, let's say you turn on C-SPAN and you see something and that makes you say, our work is benefiting people. Or what is the benchmark?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we have all kinds of measures in place. And every Thursday morning, we send out a newsletter to everybody that's interested in the movement. And we all get on the phone at noon every Thursday. It's open to everybody. Even opposing groups call in. And we go through all of our measures. Like, for example, we talk about the number of conferences and meetings that are happening within the movement. We talk about the national press that we've gotten over the last week, if it was positive or not positive, and how many tweets and Facebook, social networking type articles have happened. So all of that can be tracked. Then we go down to the judiciary, and we talk about the number of court cases that have been filed by either any of the partners or affiliates like ACLU, Freedom From Religion Foundation, American Humanist Association, Americans United. We talk about international issues, what's going on before the UN. We talk about how many meetings we have on Capitol Hill, congressional briefings. We're having our first ever Capitol Hill congressional briefing on October the 1st.
Great.
So it's very easy to measure and show success. More endorsing organizations, more allies, more state chapters.
Great. Well, that's terrific. And I need to call into that meeting sometime and learn, too.
Yes.
We've got to take a quick break, but there's a lot more coming up with Edwina Rogers, Executive Director of the Secular Coalition for America. And then later, I'll be talking to Kathy Marino-Thomas of Marriage Equality USA. Now, don't forget that there's more of this conversation and all of the interviews that we do on this week's show available online. We've also posted all of the video interviews that we did at the Democrat National Convention. So go to stateofbelief.com, turn up your computer speakers, and just get a good education and enjoyable conversations. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio. This free State of Belief radio podcast is brought to you by Interfaith Alliance, representing 185,000 members across the U.S., drawn from 75 different faith traditions. We're committed to protecting faith and freedom. Find out about the work we do to protect the boundaries between religion and government and unite diverse voices to challenge extremism and build common ground by visiting our website, interfaithalliance.org. Whether you care deeply about minority religious rights, school bullying, LGBT discrimination, the influence of religion on politics, or the influence of politics on religion, Interfaith Alliance is working on initiatives you'll want to support. Learn more and become a member at interfaithalliance.org. Welcome back to State of Belief Radio. I'm Welton Gaddy. My guest is Edwina Rogers, Executive Director of the Secular Coalition for America. Edwina, it's terribly frustrating to me and to many others how polarized the very issue of secular politics has become. If you watch the news, you quickly get the idea that on one side, good, God-fearing Americans are desperately trying to save the Christian principles of this country, while on the other, liberal devil worshipers are restlessly channeling Stalin and Marx. And that's why I think it's so important to have someone like you, in particular like you, in the position that you now hold. You were an economic advisor to George W. Bush. You've also served as general counsel to the National Republican Senatorial Committee. And I have to ask you, is it frustrating to you that more Republicans don't seem to see that a secular approach to public policy and governance is the true American way?
Yeah, I mean, it is disappointing for me that the majority of the problem, the current problem, is more so in the Republican Party than in the Democratic Party or some of the minor problems. But it wasn't always like this. You know, think about the early 80s when I first got involved in the Republican Party and Ronald Reagan was sweeping through. And he had some really good things to say, Ronald Reagan did, about the separation of church and state. And it was all about free enterprise and pulling yourself up by the bootstraps and individual rights, the Republican Party. But things have changed, and we do scorecards on all elected officials, House and Senate, and the majority of the Fs, yes, by far, are going to Republicans and not to members of the Democratic Party.
Yeah. I'd really love to hear your thoughts on the rhetoric that came out of the two national parties' recent conventions. I heard pandering from both sides to a particular type of Christian voter. What did you hear?
I heard the same, and I was disappointed by both parties. I was at the Republican convention. Mm-hmm. I was right on the floor. I listened to every speech. There was only, you know, one situation where I was really kind of alarmed and concerned, and that was Senator Rubio from mm-hmm. Florida. Mm-hmm. And I heard him speak back in June, and he actually said in June, if you do not have faith, you do not deserve freedom. And I was shocked that he said that in June with the cameras rolling. So some of the comments that he said when he introduced Mitt Romney were minor compared to what I heard in June when he was speaking before the Faith and Freedom Foundation. Now, on the Democratic side, of course, we were very disappointed with what happened with the platform, with the omission of the word God, and then, of course, President Obama having to call because they were being labeled the Godless Party and, you know, try to get that back in. Yeah. And on the Republican side, God is now in there 10 times, where it used to not be in either platform. The platforms used to be quite secular, but it's sort of like, you know, who can be the most religious? And that's only a certain type of religion, the sort of evangelistic Christian right type of religion.
Yeah. What could both parties do to more responsibly address the concerns of all Americans?
Well, they would do just what we're talking about here today. They would try to keep religion out of politics and out of government. And we do talk to both campaigns, and we do talk to both mm-hmm. political parties. I've met with people at the RNC and with Romney's campaign and the coalition folks, and we constantly you're talking to the Obama campaign, and they come onto our calls, mm-hmm. their officials do. And they're mm-hmm. both courting people that are in the secular movement. You know, 20 to 30% of the population, you don't want to write them off. And we have a meeting with the staff of Senator Rubio's next week. So we're there. We're educating people. We're doing briefings. We're, you know, calling them out. We're trying to get things back to the center mm-hmm. so we can have the forward march of humanity moving on and try to keep religion free and sort of an individual right.
Edwina Rogers is the executive director of the Secular Coalition for America. And Edwina, I want to thank you for taking time to be with us on State of Belief Radio.
Yes, we appreciate what you do.
Another quick break, and then I'll be joined by Kathy Marino Thomas, who is co-president of Marriage Equality USA. I'm Welton Gaddy. You're listening to State of Belief Radio. brought to you by Interfaith Alliance. Welcome back to State of Belief Radio, everyone. I'm Welton Gaddy. Last year on this show, I had the pleasure of speaking with Kathy Marino Thomas, then head of Marriage Equality New York. Since then, Maryland's governor signed a similar law, and the several states have made progress on this issue. There have also been aggressive, well-funded campaigns to roll back these fundamental family rights in several states, and in November, some voters will be called upon to cast a ballot potentially restricting the rights of their fellow Americans. Also since then, Kathy Marino Thomas has moved up to become co-president of the organization Marriage Equality USA, and I am delighted to have her back with us today on State of Belief Radio. Kathy, welcome.
Hi, thanks.
Would you summarize briefly the key battleground states where marriage equality is in play and kind of what's going on there?
There's a lot going on. We at Marriage Equality USA are focusing on four states in particular for this election season. Maryland, that has their governor's support of marriage equality, but it has been placed on a referendum allowing the people to vote on the issue of whether or not to keep the law.
Mm-hmm.
We are focusing on Maine in the same position as Maryland. Maine's vote is actually the second go-round for their referendum.
Mm-hmm.
And we, for the first time, as the LGBT community, has asked for that referendum.
Mm-hmm.
So that's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
We believe that the voting was not above board last time, and we believe the votes in Maine are there for our equality.
Mm-hmm.
We are also focusing on Minnesota and Washington State in similar situations as Maryland.
Mm-hmm. What kind of work are you doing in those states to get people ready for the vote?
Well, now that we have merged with our sister organization in California, we are a national group. We are working on phone banks across the country. We have a system that you can go either to a local phone banking center or you can phone bank from your computer at home. To try and reach out to voters in those key states and explain to them the issue of marriage equality and why our families so badly need this civil right. We are also sending some foot soldiers, I like to call them, around to these states to do some good old-fashioned canvassing door-to-door on this issue.
Wherever and whenever this issue comes up, any and all opposition to marriage equality always, it seems, always boils down to religious language. As a secular democracy, the rights of all of our citizens should simply not be defined by the religious beliefs of some of our citizens. Do you see the opposition as purely motivated by religion, or are there some other agendas at work?
Well, I think that our opposition's bottom line objections are two things. Religion, as you've stated, has no place in a country where our Constitution is based on the separation of church and state.
Right.
And their view that gay men and lesbians are not fit to be parents. Now, on this second issue, the data just does not support their view.
Mm-hmm.
There are varying estimates on the number of children that LGBTQ parents are raising, but the data is clear that these children are just as likely to be well-adjusted as the progeny of traditional union.
Hmm. Imagine for a minute, Kathy, that I'm having a conversation with an opponent of marriage equality. What is the single most effective point that I can make, and how do I make it?
What I usually say is the following. Our families, they exist. They exist with or without support of the law. Our love and commitment to one another also exists with or without support of the law. However, without support of the law, we are dependent on society to take care of us.
Mm-hmm.
In support of the law, we are free to take care of ourselves.
that's a good one, and it helps people understand how to respond when sometimes that knowledge is always right at the tip of their tongue.
Correct.
For many LGBT Americans in binational relationships, the state-by-state adoption of marriage equality really is a cruel joke. It's
yep.
actually alarming how many progressive Americans seem to think that marrying a non-citizen same-sex partner now conveys some significant rights, when in fact it does no such thing.
It actually harms them.
Yes. So how far off do you think federal changes are, and are you all working on reaching that goal also?
Oh, yes, absolutely. The good news is there are a few cases making their way through the system that have been presented to the Supreme Court. Two in particular are of high interest to me and to our organization. One is the Proposition 8 case, which I think mm-hmm. anyone working on marriage equality is interested in. And the second is a case brought by a New York State widow, Edie Windsor, mm-hmm. against the IRS. Both of these cases are supposed to be reviewed by the Supreme Court on September the 24th. If they decide they do not want to hear the Proposition 8 case, we will win the case in California, and marriages will resume.
Yeah.
The problem with that is that it's centric to the state of California. Edie Windsor's case, however, was brought against the IRS when her partner of 44 years passed away, and Edie was presented with a tax bill of over $300,000. Edie is 84 years old, and she decided that she wanted the focus of the remainder of her life to be suing the IRS for the right to inherit tax-free from her wife of 44 years. She actually won her case and was given a judgment of $352,000 to be paid back to her. Of course, it was appealed, and it is now being presented to the Supreme Court. There again, if they refuse to hear the case, Edie will win her judgment. We will have then won with our state-level marriage license against the IRS, and that would be our first federal win.
Mm-hmm.
This would be a step in the right direction to challenging the Defense of Marriage Act at a federal level.
I don't know about you, but for me, it's difficult to talk and hold your breath at the same time. But when the Supreme Court's mentioned, I hold my breath.
Me too.
Okay. Kathy, what resources does Marriage Equality USA offer for friends and allies who'd like to be more effective advocates for fairness for all families?
There are various places on our website that you can put in your name and number and volunteer for various things, the 20 Million More campaign, our Speakers Bureau, getting just generally involved in the issue itself. Of course, if time is an issue for you, you can always donate money to help us do our work. Also available on our website, marriageequality.org. We have lots of work to do, and we have lots of jobs to give away.
Kathy, it must have been wonderful to see marriage equality added to the Democratic National Convention's platform.
Oh, God, yes.
Earlier, the president's endorsement made global headlines. Just how important are such declarations of support?
Well, they're extremely important. First of all, President Obama is the first president to sitting president to actually come out in support of marriage equality, or just in out for equality for all families, which is really the high-level important issue here. We want everyone in this country to be treated the same, and he has certainly worked hard to get this country back to its founding principles. It gives everyone hope. Mm-hmm. It gives people the knowledge that up there in the world of people who can actually make changes, they get it.
Mm-hmm. I've been talking with Kathy Marino-Thomas, co-president of Marriage Equality USA. She's the former head of Marriage Equality New York, and we can only hope that the same level of success follows Kathy from the latter to the former. Kathy Marino-Thomas, thank you so much for joining us today on State of Belief Radio.
Thank you very much for having me.
Before we go, I'd like to take just a moment to express my personal sorrow about the senseless violence and loss of life that resulted from the attacks of 9/11. No, I'm not talking about the terrorist attacks of 11 years ago, horrific as they were. Sadly, September 11th of 2012 saw deadly attacks of another kind on the American embassy in Cairo, Egypt, and the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, Libya. One of the victims of the Libyan attack, Envoy Christian Stevens, had worked closely with Libyan rebels leading up to the ouster of dictator Muammar Gaddafi. On Wednesday at noon, the Islamic Society of North America called a press conference at the National Press Club here in Washington, D.C. I was honored to be involved in that press conference and speak to those who attended it, along with the ambassador to the United States from Libya. Here is a part of what I had to say at that press conference in relation to this breaking and terribly sad story. I've been with Muslim communities all over this world. I understand, as I think all of us standing here do, that interfaith dialogue, interreligious dialogue, is absolutely essential. Unfortunately, not in our country and not internationally, not everyone understands the concept of religious freedom. But we do all agree that interreligious dialogue never trades in violence. Interfaith dialogue is to produce mutual understanding. Violence promotes death, which in all of our religions is condemned. I want today not only to express sympathy to those who have lost friends and colleagues and family members, but also to assure those of you in the Muslim world, as well as people in the United States, that religion that promotes violence is something else parading as religion. None of the great faith traditions embrace violence as a value. And I'd like to say, in a personal word, that I am embarrassed and ashamed that the Christian religion has been associated with an act as hateful as that of releasing a film intended to incite violence and even to cause the deaths of innocent people. It is a form of rhetorical hate crime. It has no place in our democracy or in Christianity. And for one person to endorse a film and to commend it to the world in the name of Christ, bearing the name of Christ, that causes this kind of violence and loss and division is wrong. The Christian religion is about peace, just as is Judaism, just as Islam. But I want to say, for all of you to hear, that in the name of Christianity, I condemn the promotion of that kind of hatred and weep over the kind of consequences, deadly consequences, it has provoked. Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Please visit us online at stateofbelief.com to find out more about the show, hear extended interviews, read transcripts, and sign up for our podcasts. You can learn about the new State of Belief app for iPhone and Android devices, so you can listen to State of Belief anywhere, anytime. Share your thoughts on what you've heard. Share them on Facebook and Twitter. Contact information is available if you need it at stateofbelief.com, including the toll-free listener line, 800-856-0277. As always, we encourage you to tell others about this show and encourage them to listen so they can be a part of a growing conversation. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That state of belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see, well.